before I get to the questions, I'd like to comment on the suggestion in your statement that there are some questioning the value of having a conversation on coexistence. And I want to clarify that concern that we are hearing, that this hearing is not that a conversation is taking place, but with the form and the timing of those conversations. The USDA currently is engaged in a decision-making process on a petition to deregulate a specific crop. What is of concern here is the report that this conversation started with a comment something to the effect of from USDA, and I think this is a pretty accurate quote. Our preference is to have you all help us do it as best we can. But if that's not possible, then we'll do the best we can. I would hope that you would recognize that a time when you have a company and waiting for a decision that could cost the industry millions of dollars, thousands of jobs, comments like that create more of an atmosphere of less than cooperation, a sense of cooperation. And I would hope that you and your entire staff would bear in mind that you've instructed your staff that this is not acceptable. Equally important, and the focus of today's forum, is the question of whether the issues and options raised in the discussion of coexistence are political issues that fall outside your legal mandate to determine the safety of those products under the Plant Protection Act. Now, on this issue, I promise you a series of, I hope, relatively painless questions. That said, Mr. Secretary, how many biotech varieties have been fully deregulated by USDA? In other words, approved without any of the coexistence restrictions that are envisioned within the so-called Option 3 for partial deregulation of alfalfa?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have approved 75 products. I'm not familiar with the conditions or circumstances of all of the approvals, but I think we have approved 75. There have been some that were withdrawn before we got to the approval process, but I think it's 75.
That's an impressive number, Mr. Secretary. How many of those varieties contain a similar glycosylfate tolerance gene as that which has been incorporated into the Roundup Ready alfalfa product under consideration?
I would have to ask, if I could, Mr. Chairman, Cindy Smith.
Of course.
A guess would be maybe 10%.
Okay. Well, we're going to guess, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, roughly 10%.
Okay. And is it correct that each review of the currently available Roundup Ready varieties of crop seed that USDA has deregulated were determined by USDA to be substantially equivalent to their conventional counterparts?
I think that's a correct statement.
Okay. And is it correct that each review of the biotech alfalfa product conducted by USDA has concluded that the product is substantially equivalent to conventional alfalfa?
That's safe to say, Mr. Chairman.
I promise you I'm not Perry Mason, but I do appreciate your answers.
Well,
it appears to many observers, and I guess that dates me, doesn't it, referring to Perry Mason. It appears to many observers that, and that was a weak attempt at humor, that the partial deregulation option presented by USDA will have a much broader impact on all of U.S. agriculture, our international negotiations, and further development of these important products. Please explain, if you could, Secretary, or would, I know you will, your thinking on how a partial deregulation alternative would promote these mutually stated goals.
Mr. Chairman, this has been a long and torturous process that alfalfa has gone through. As you indicated, this started in 2005. Courts have come in and have essentially directed us to perform a more extensive evaluation under an environmental impact statement. And if I might take your question and just try to briefly address the ranking member's question. We are instructed under the NEPA process to consider two approaches. One is the environmental assessment, the other is the environmental impact statement. We had prior to the last several years used the EA fairly successfully in moving this process forward to get to the 75 products that have been deregulated. Recently, there have been questions about the comprehensive nature of those assessments, which have led courts to direct us to do more extensive reviews in the form of environmental impact statement. We have done that, and our belief is that the reason for the courts directing us to do that is that they believe that those environmental impact statements ought to, quote-unquote, inform the process going forward. We produced an extensive EIS in connection with alfalfa. It's roughly 2,300 pages. And in it, we identified a number of areas, put a draft EIS out for comment, received a number of comments back, and in an effort to try to be responsive to those comments, took a look at various alternatives. And understanding that when we do this, it also creates an opportunity for review of the final EIS, and that in turn creates another opportunity for us to be informed as we end up making a decision. We have 30 days to make that, we have to have the review period has to occur for at least 30 days, and it is our intention to make a decision as close to the end of that 30-day period as possible, because we understand and appreciate that folks need to know what they can plant, what they can't plant, and we are on track to do that. When we proposed the various alternatives, what happened is it created and generated a dialogue between differing interests, and I think that it has been a positive experience for those who have participated in that dialogue. Now, why do I say that? Because I think it has allowed us to better understand the unique nature of alfalfa. It has better allowed us to understand the greater awareness of stewardship contracting that's taking place in the market. It's allowed us to have questions raised about the process of verifying those stewardship contracts. And it's, I think, underscored the importance of trying to build more of a trusting relationship between various interests of agriculture, all of which I think are positive. And perhaps most positive of all is it has helped us at USDA begin to look at ways in which we can use tools outside of this process to help further create this sense of cooperation. So, for example, issues have been raised during this discussion about the purity of seed and whether or not there will be, in fact, an assurance that we will continue to have purity of seed, so that anybody who wants to do organic, anyone who wants to do identity-preserved non-GE will always have that option. We can play a role in that. So it has been an informative process.
Secretary, I ask one last question at the indulgence of my colleagues here. You've obviously been a biotech guy for decades. Looking once again at this international negotiations issue, looking at the kind of efforts that this country and your department's been a part of for decades, does it concern you that if ultimately the segregated concept is what the department decides to do, does it worry you what that does to our decades of pursuing our trading partners and our friends around the world, that if you use sound science, if you follow established rules, that these products are absolutely safe and that this segregation business is not necessary? Does that cause you some personal angst?
It would cause me angst, Mr. Chairman, if the decision we made was not science-based and not rules-based, because that has been the consistent approach of this government for a considerable period of time, and it's something that we have been critical of in other international forums. Let me say, in terms of my experience with biotechnology and other countries, we developed, when I first came into office, an overall strategy for how we might be better positioning biotechnology in the international community. That involves a better public diplomacy. It involves better articulation of the benefits of biotechnology. It involves identifying countries in areas of the world that are more receptive of biotechnology and encouraging them to speak to their counterparts, whether it's in Africa or Asia, about the important role that biotechnology can play in food security. And so we're looking at this strategically and comprehensively, and I think that's one of the reasons why I think this forum is important, because it gives us yet another opportunity, a public opportunity, to talk about the benefits of biotechnology and also talk about the need for American agriculture to have choices and diversity.